Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, your source for breaking news, business trends, and economic forecasts here and abroad that impact one-third of America's economy. And now your hosts, Lou Weiss and Tim Grady.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss, who is also president of All Metals and Forge Group, who is a sponsor for Manufacturing Talk Radio. And we're going to be talking, Lou, with Tim Fiore, as we do on the first business day of every month when they release their ISM number. And you and I have been twisting in the wind, hoping on this one.
Absolutely. So can I say it? Can I say it, please? 50.9. Tim Fiore did a great job this month.
Twist no longer, Tim. Gentlemen.
And there he is.
Tim, we're going to be very interested to hear your detail, which is why we have you on this show behind this report, because this is really important. Give us the update, Tim.
Okay, right. So we're back in expansion. They're back in the saddle again, as I say.
Oh, you bet. Yay.
Yeah, big shift, right? I mean, big shift, 3.1 points. That's a big shift. So lots of stuff going on, you know, especially with how we closed the month of January, too. But, you know, broadly speaking, we had our sentiment was twice as good in January as it was in December. We had 2.4 positive comments to every comment that wasn't as positive, which is a really good thing. Tariffs were at their lowest comment level in quite some time. I think the tariff number was a 16% of comments, and December is 24. So we had computer and electronics as well as chemicals coming back into expansion territory. Computers was there last month, but not very strong. Chemicals was contracting. It's now back in expansion. Not super strong, but okay, fine. So we got food and beverage, we got computer electronics, and we got chemicals, three of the top six, all in expansion territory, and two of those three are number one and number two. So I think that's all really good news. Both of those were supported by a pretty good level of new order intake, and as well as new export orders. In the case of computer and electronics, there was a decent level of backlog also. So let's talk about the activities. First off, let's eliminate the stuff that we probably don't want to talk too much about. Production was the number one industry sector that expanded. Well, honestly, it probably wouldn't have been hard to meet or exceed December's output. With the holiday period in there, the extended holiday period, the essential opinion of manufacturers that, well, you know, if you want to take the day off, it's probably okay. Make sure you take all your vacation pay, the whole, you know, looking at potential furloughs and stuff. It's not hard to believe that January was a better month on production than December was. So, you know, that being said, and that was the single biggest contributor really to the PMI growing. So let's talk about the stuff that's a bit more indicative of the future. So demand, as I mentioned, new orders at 52, up 4.4. In large part driven by computers and electronics as well as chemicals. Very good signs for the future. But, you know, we're not talking about each one of them having PMIs in the high 50s range. So there's still a ways to go here. I think we talked about the fact that, new export orders would definitely help new orders expand. And sure enough, we went up 6 points on the new export order, which is good. And, you know, back to the whole point here about computer and electronics, I think in large part that had to do with the fact that there was a bit of more certainty in the counter tariff area coming out of China. So there was more new export orders coming from China to the U.S. producers. And I think that happened in the January, late December time frame. And you saw that show up in the new export order number. And then in December, we talked about the fact that prices were growing again. Lead times are being extended, and that would probably push buyers off the fence to place orders. I believe that did happen, and that combined with the new export order growth driven by primarily China's willingness to place more orders with us again, especially in the computer area with the Huawei issue kind of dying down a little bit, is what drove the new order number up to 52. Would have liked to have seen that higher, but hey, it's in expansion territory nonetheless. So let me pause there for a minute.
Okay. That's all great and positive news. We are excited to see these numbers jump up. I was going to ask you, Tim, but you said something about it already. So, Lou?
Yeah, I wanted to go back a little bit about the transportation equipment that seems to be still in a slowdown mode. Do you have anything on that, Tim?
Yeah, for sure. So transportation equipment is another good signal. I think I put something in the report about that. It's been contracting very strongly for non-seasonally adjusted. Let's see. It's been contracting really – it peaked in – as most of these did, they peaked in the August of 18 time frame. But I've been tracking this thing now since May. And, think of May around the break-even point. We've been in contraction territory since May. So this we rebounded somewhere around 20%. So we're still contracting, but not as heavily. And I would call it as a moderate contraction at this point versus a severe contraction. So that's good. I mean, that's the max, that's automobiles, that's trucks, it's rail, it's boats. I think, you look at the new order level, is at the highest level it has been since September. Let's see, inventories are still higher than you'd want. Raw material inventories are higher than you'd like to see them. But then again, they're higher now than they have been in many months, which maybe is saying that people are stocking up on inventory to do future builds. Customer inventories are still higher than what you would like to see. Backlog is at the break-even point, which is good. New export orders are up. So, there may be a sign here. Transportation is our number three industry sector. There may be a sign here that over the next couple of months we'll see this thing get back into expansion territory.
What I heard over the weekend that Boeing is expecting that the 737 MAX production should be picking up by April or May. So that should bode well for the second half of the year with regards to transportation, specifically aerospace, commercial, and defense.
Yeah, that's kind of what I saw. I saw a couple of companies release their earnings calls. They're big suppliers to the 737. I heard the same thing. I heard, a three-month impact.
Right.
The interesting thing here is that we know that Boeing is not assembling. We know that Spirit, their biggest subcontractor, used to be Boeing's fuselage building facility in Wichita, is not building fuselages either. Both of those, wings and fuselages, take a lot of space, right? So I get that. What hasn't been clear is whether the other first-tier suppliers that build very expensive, complicated components, engines, avionics, landing gear systems, air conditioning systems, whether they're actually stepping down to zero. And I think the report, given where we are, is saying that no, they're not doing that. And in reality, for a three-month delay in shipments, you would probably build the inventory. And maybe they're not building 42, maybe they're building 35.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're trying to right-size it so they can consume their cash appropriately, but they're not. I don't think they're going to zero. And that's not in the public realm. Although I think if a lot of these companies actually de-staffed their company to support the zero production build, you would see a lot more layoffs than you're seeing. So I think that's all positive for consumer confidence, that people aren't being furloughed, they're not being laid off. And like we said last month, it's not realistic to think that Boeing can go from 42 to zero and then back up to 42 in a quarter, given how long it's taken them to get to 42, and they want to get to 57. And if they really want to catch up now that they've stopped, they got 120 at 42 times three, they've got 120 more aircraft they have to build once they start up to get back on schedule.
I wouldn't want those employment headaches.
Yeah, think about that. That's if they build 12 extra a month, beyond the 53 to 65, it would still take them a year for a 3-month shutdown. I mean, think about it.
Wow.
Think about 42 aircraft coming off an assembly line a month. I mean, that's almost, if you look at 20 working days, which they probably are not, there's probably more than that. That's two a day, two aircraft a day. I mean, that's, we probably haven't built anything like that since 1944.
Right.
Yeah, right. And those were women that making the planes.
Well, they weren't as complicated
right.
either, were they?
Hardly.
Well, they, yeah. If women were making the planes, we probably would be, I'm not going to say it, we'd be a bit more productive.
Could be true. Tim, I'm just wondering the tariff issue, and only because Lou brought up something. He obviously watches this stuff very closely. The phase one with China, everyone had hoped that the steel and aluminum tariffs would back off. Lou, I think you're hearing differently, that steel didn't back off and aluminum went up. Is that correct, Lou?
That's pretty much correct. The steel prices that went up were actually steel products, you know, toasters and this, that, and the other thing. It wasn't the raw steel, except for aluminum. So it was kind of misleading. And now they're talking about the phase two tariff relief will come. At least as of last week, will come after the election.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you know, the good thing about this is that it's now pretty much off the table, right? We know what we know today is pretty much going to be it, barring some really unusual event. I think when the administration closes out on the deal and publicizes it, it's pretty much closed out. So if the administration owns it, then they own it. If they don't own it, then you know you don't know whether it's ever closed out. At
right.
16% of comments, down from 24% in December, we peaked at like 46 or 47% back last summer or a year ago last summer, I forget. 16%, the supply chain is ready and able to deal with this. And I think the number is $365 billion of imports from China are still subject to tariffs. And that's out of $650 billion, I think it's a, here we go. So there's $370 billion of product that's still tariffed out of $625 billion of goods that we import from China. You know, the difference between the two is that $115 billion tranche that was related to consumer electronics. You know, I think that's gone away. And what they've really done is they've just reduced tariffs from 15% to 7.5% on $125 billion of intermediate products. So I think back to Lou's point, the stuff that manufacturers in the U.S. use is still tariffed, and it's still at a fairly decent level of tariffs. It's either 7.5 or 15%, or in some cases 25. And so, you know, if you want to buy a bracket or a weldment from China, you're paying the steel content tariff on that. There's no doubt. And most likely you're still paying tariffs on the raw material, but very few companies import raw steel from China, or for that matter, raw aluminum. It's usually in some modified shape.
One of the things that I think also has occurred is that the panic in the marketplace, for the most part, has diminished to something less than panic about the tariffs, number one. And number two, I think that those who were greatly affected by it have passed on some of the expenses and costs to their customers. And the customers are, you know, going, oh, hum, and they've absorbed it. And and everybody pays a little more, primarily the end-use consumer, you, me, Tim. So we're all paying it. We don't notice it. And you don't even hear about it much on radio and TV anymore. It's almost
yeah.
like a non-existent issue.
Well, it's now like it's like tax. It's like the, you know, taxes. Once the Tax Cut and Job Act went into place a couple of months later, nobody really talked about it, right? I mean,
right.
Now we talk about it in different ways. We talk about the $1 trillion of deficit that we've got for the next 20 years at that'll eventually sink us all. But then, you know, I think at this point the tariff is a tax, and we're going to pay it. I mean, the European piece keeps coming back and forth, and there seems to be moving towards a resolution there too. I read something over the weekend that I think the IMF or something said that this whole tariff issue took about 0.8% out of global GDP in 2019. That's a humongous amount. That's a big number. You know, the way it rippled through everything. And time will tell whether it was worth it or whether we really got anything out of it. I think I got my own impressions. I'm a supply manager who believes that free markets are the best markets. And I also believe that China abused their positions that they got when they came into WTO. I also think the economic community should have changed those conditions as they developed. So, you know, maybe we're there now. I also think that the techniques we used to get here were probably a little bit more brutal than I would have suggested. And the timing, since it's happened so quickly, has been so disruptive. I think we were on a nice growth profile here and up to August of 2018. And then when things really started to escalate, when Mexico came in around the border issues and, you know, when the China situation didn't get resolved, I think in May of that year, you know, things really went downhill.
And from the 7 or 8 trade wars that we've had historically in our past, my recollection is that nobody gained by it.
No, nobody gained by it. Nobody gained by it. So, you know, here are some interesting numbers. China PMI at 50 in January, right? Still very sluggish. I mean, they've gone, let's see, I'm going all the way back. April, they were 50.1. March, they were 50.5. So they're over a year into stable and or declining manufacturing output. That's concerning. China export gained just 0.5% in 2019. It gained 10% in 2018. That's concerning. Number two economy in the world, right? You can't really ignore it anymore. It's there, and it's integrated. It's a lot different from the early days when they entered the World Economic Community through the WTO. They're much bigger, and they're much more integrated into the global supply chain. So, you know, when they burp, this whole coronavirus is a serious issue. You know, probably a much more bigger of a longer term issue than even the tariff discussions, because this is going to be so disruptive to global supply chains due to the fact that the uncertainty, the quarantining of people, the quarantining of equipment, the uncertainty around transporting goods inside of China. How hard is it going to be to export product out of China anymore? How hard is it going to be to import product once it shows up at the docks? People calling in sick, people not going to work because they don't want to get sick. It's you know, it's very congested there, and it's very easy to pass things along. This is a big concern. We didn't really see it in our report. We had 2.5% of our comments were coronavirus related, more about prospective impacts, not about what was happening in January. I think February and March will be pretty big.
Well, we heard Secretary Wilbur Ross came out with his comment over the weekend that the coronavirus is good for America.
I saw that.
It brings jobs back. Stunning comment.
Stunning. Well, you know, he's got a perspective. You can support him or not. He's got a perspective. I mean, well, you know.
Again, I'm not talking about him. I'm only talking about his statement.
But he is pretty consistent.
He is.
It will be interesting to see how much this virus, which began in China and is expanding rapidly in China, is going to affect their ability to manufacture and export. I agree with you, Tim. It could be quite serious.
Well, I used to come in and out of there a lot in the early 2000s, and they're very careful. I mean, they were a lot more careful, I thought, than other places around the world in terms of trying to contain this. They kind of practice the same techniques that you would see on cruise ships when people are boarding and getting off. There's a certain level of attention that you have to pay to keeping everything clean and germ-free. And when I used to go in there in the early 2000s, post SARS and avian flu, you could tell that it was serious. You get on a plane, and you get off the plane, you'd land in Shanghai or Beijing, and there'd be four or five people that would get on the plane, you know, a couple of police guys and some medical people, and they'd hit everybody with an optical pyrometer on the forehead to take your temperature before you got off the plane. And then, you know, there was clearly sensors on the way in to validate that you weren't sweating or sniffling. And I do recall people coming in with colds, and they got quarantined for 2 or 3 days, you know, taken to quarantine spots. So, you know, this is not China of the early 2000s. This is China much more developed, much more sophisticated. You think about the logistics activities that they pull off every day to try to feed 30 million people in, what, a dozen cities every day to get the food in, to get the debris and the waste out. It's incredible. There's nothing in the world that's of that scale, and they do a really great job of it. So, you know, looking at this, I think they'll contain it, and they'll drive it to ground. I'm not concerned about it spreading internationally as much as I am about how long it will take them to snuff it out, because they do kind of reside in close quarters. And you could put a billion two people, right? Billion two people in a relatively small area. It's the compaction is pretty dramatic.
We do know that there are people who, once this broke, started stocking up in their homes food for 2 or 3 months, you know, like 50 pound bags of rice and dried foods and so on to help avoid having to go out of the home. So
this is a concern, right? This is a concern. I mean, either they or their children have jobs. The people that they work for are expecting them to show up, and people won't show up. I mean, they'll be too concerned about their own health and safety, and that'll kind of precipitate through whole communities that I'm not going to work, you know?
Well, it's also stated that perhaps after the Chinese New Year period is over, that there may be certain industries that the government is going to actually shut down. So that's...
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it'd be...
You know, the funny thing is I think the last time they had a pretty big outbreak, it seems to occur, but what happens is you have such a massive movement of people from the coastlines back to the inter-China, Xi'an, places like even Wuhan. I think Wuhan's actually considered on the coast, but it's got to be 4 or 5 hours from the coast. Chengdu, Chongqing, you have hundreds of millions of people who go back. So if there's something, so you get all this population relocating, and they're bringing these viruses with them. So it's really much more so than anything that I think we see, because when you're in China in the last 20 years, you probably lived around the coast, but the employment expansion came from people leaving the farmlands in the inner cities and going to the coast, many times leaving their families and sending money back, like we see here with Mexico and the U.S. And then once a year they go back. There's probably more than once a year, but at least once a year they go back for the Lunar New Year. So you have hundreds of millions of people going back to small towns where the medical support isn't as big as it is in the big cities, and cleanliness is probably not as good, refrigeration on food. So it's you really move these things quickly. But like I said, China's a really sophisticated country from this standpoint. They know how to contain this stuff. I mean, you think of the Japanese being really good at this kind of stuff. Well, the Chinese are probably just as good, except they're doing it at 5 times the scale.
Well, have you ever seen one of their in the ground hole toilets?
Well, I've been all through China. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
they're doing it at such scale, Tim, that they're now completing a 1,000-bed hospital in 10 days. And they're building a 1,600-bed hospital that'll be ready by February 5th, which was also built in less than 2 weeks.
Isn't that something? It's astonishing. And
I still
remember when I was in Chongqing in 1993, and I looked out the window of a brand-new hotel, really nice Holiday Inn, one of the nicest Holiday Inn I ever stayed in. Looked out the window, and they were building a building next door, and they were digging the hole for the foundation, and it was a bunch of guys with baskets and shovels. And this was 1993. Baskets and shovels. That's how they were excavating. Now, I think I know the picture you're talking about, Tim. There was a picture of about 25, 20-ton excavators clearing land to put up a tent hospital.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The New York Times. In Wuhan, they were doing it.
In Wuhan.
So.
Yeah, I know. And in 1993, they were using pickaxes, shovels, and baskets to move soil.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that contains the virus and how it affects manufacturing in China in terms of exports to the U.S.
Yeah.
Because $656 billion of exports to the U.S. is a lot of exports.
And we're, I think, China's about a $12 trillion economy, so we're 5%, right? Just the exports. Okay,
right.
So
right.
Let me finish up by the, I think the bigger story was the input side. Outside of demand and computer electronics recovering a bit, it was the input side. It was really the supplier delivery number, as well as lead times and prices. And this kind of bodes a cautionary note for February. So, supplier delivery number was relatively flat. So I was hoping that the supplier delivery number would grow beyond last month's supplier delivery number. And that would indicate the suppliers are continuing to struggle. And, a lot of the comments that came in were more around lead times are shortening again. They're delivering better on time, which kind of says that the pressure at the sub-supplier market level is easing compared to where it was in December. So that I'm a little bit concerned about that. Prices were positive. You know, prices grew again from December to January by almost 2 points. But then all the indications were last week was that raw material prices were declining, and primarily driven by the uncertainty around China. So we saw steel prices dropping in the last 10 days. I'm sure you guys saw that. Aluminum prices have been dropping. Copper prices dropped significantly. And that's not even counting what's happening to soy and corn. So my concern is that this is I can't really say that at this point we're beyond a 48 to 52 PMI. It still feels that just looking at the numbers by themselves for January, I would say we're closer to 52 than 48. But the coronavirus coming in at the late stage there, having that absolute uncertainty around the global economy, the fact that China is, you know, 5% of GDP is exported to the U.S., probably 7% to Europe. There's going to be an absolute unwillingness to unpack containers for a period of time. And oil prices are dropping, natural gas prices are dropping because of the concern about global consumption, driven in large part by the coronavirus, has put February and March into question here. So I think that's the bigger story. The input side wasn't continuing to support the consumption and the demand side. So there's a bit of question here as to how strong this thing is. We might continue to bounce up and down for the next 2 to 4 months.
No doubt.
I'm left stunned. I'm left stunned. I mean, it's an amazing jump from 47 or 8 it was to now to 50. And I agree with you that the coronavirus is going to have a major longer-term effect unless somebody comes up with a vaccine, which I hear is going to take anywhere from 4 to 6 months. By that time, half of China could be wiped out.
Yeah.
I think they're already at 9,000 confirmed cases.
I thought I heard 13 or 14,000. It's just growing incredibly fast.
Yeah.
So, okay, a couple things, and then we'll wrap it up. So, hey, thanks very much for sending me your manufacturing perspective on 2020 Manufacturing Magazine. It was very helpful. I had a chance to go through that.
Great.
Yeah,
thank
some really
you.
Good authors in there, good perspectives on what's going on. And from a positive note here, I want to talk a little bit about employment. For January now, again, no coronavirus impact. You know, back in November, I started to track the employment comments, and 43 or 44% of the comments were force reduction related, of which two-thirds of them were around layoffs, layoffs and active furloughing. And now, for the second month in a row, we're down to the 33, 34% level of total comments. of which only one third of them are layoff related. So I think that's good. I think the manufacturing community at this point believes, based on estimated demand for 2020, that they'll be able to hit their headcount objectives through attrition and selective rehiring, supporting an attrited person. So, and I think that's very supportive of the consumer confidence number. As long as we stay away from very significant large-scale layoffs, then the consumers will continue to have a lot of confidence that they can buy things and they'll be able to pay their bills the next month. So I think that's all good. That's a good note to end on.
Well, Tim, we certainly appreciate you joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio this and every month, and certainly the update on this report, Lou.
Yeah, this is great. Just more points going towards your yellow jacket. So we keep a very close count on that.
Thank you. I count on you to do that.
Okay. All right. Thanks for being on the show. And we'll see. Talk to you next week.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Tim Fiore, who is the committee chair for the Institute for Supply Management Manufacturing Report on Business, is going to jump to other interviews on other media channels, and we are very grateful that the ISM allows us to interview him for 20 or 25 minutes on this, because he goes into real depth that you cannot find in the mainstream media, and the report is certainly worth the read this month, Lou.
Yeah, I'll say. And we are going to have Anthony Nieves in about 2 days from now, who's going to give the report on non-manufacturing, which is a bit of a misnomer, because manufacturing and non-manufacturing kind of blend together at a certain point. So there is that upstream and downstream effect where everything really is manufactured one way or another. So we're looking forward to some great numbers from Anthony. Anthony, if you're listening, get to work.
Absolutely. And come and visit us at mfgtalkradio.com to hear this show, to hear Anthony's show, listen to any of our past shows, read our news updates, or get a subscription to the magazine that Tim Fiore was referencing. It is a free subscription to Manufacturing Outlook e-zine that we publish every month. And there was a great 2020 January issue, the 2020 Outlook. So we appreciate all of our listeners tuning in and visiting us at mfgtalkradio.com. And thank you for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.